is everybody pretending the Chicago office is not a step down?
What are you talking about?
Oh, she couldn't handle the pressure. Burners could tell.
I doubt that. She was always working later than anybody. If anything, she's leaving because she didn't feel valued.
Well, then she should have said something. Closed mouth, no food.
Right, because everyone automatically listens to a woman when she opens her mouth.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue a discussion today about black women's equal pay day. Why does it take black women 7 months of work into 2017 to equal what their white male counterparts were paid in 2016? My guests are Lisa Brown Alexander, president and CEO of Nonprofit HR and author of Strong on the Outside, Dying on the Inside, Muriel Garr, co-host of Beyond the Bling on Sirius XM Channel 141, and Melanie Campbell, president and CEO of the National Coalition on Black Civic Participation and convener of the Black Women's Roundtable. Lines are open. I would like to hear from you at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Well, there it is, Lisa. Closed mouth, no food. Your thoughts about that?
There is some truth to that. You do need to negotiate what you think you're worth, but you have to do it in a way that works with the organization that you work in. So you can't just roll in and say, you need to pay me what I'm worth.
Mm-hmm.
That's not necessarily the strategy that's going to work. One, you need to make sure you have people who are advocating for you, who can attest to your qualifications, your experience, how you show up in a room. All of that is critical to the decision about how much an organization thinks you're worth. It's not just what you earned before. It's how you show up where you are, how people respect you, the knowledge that you bring to the table, how unique your skill set is. There are a multitude of things that go into what determines the value of a role and how much an organization is willing to pay you.
But Muriel, that's all fine, well and good once you're there. But just like Melanie just said, a lot of times when you're starting a new position, even if we're talking about, you know, six figures, and I would argue high six figures, a lot of times those boardroom conversations include a little slip of paper and writing on a little pen and sliding it across, you know, the table. But if you're new to that position, you know, are black folks still able to just walk away? Because because I'm going to be honest with you. Muriel Garr can do that.
No, Muriel Garr can't do that.
But you're
painting that picture as if Muriel Garr could do that, and doing that means she's not going to suffer financially.
And that's my point.
The point is, at some point, you've got to be willing to stand up for yourself versus just taking the crumbs from the table. And I think in many instances, oftentimes we as women, and particularly we as black women, have been willing to accept the crumbs from the table. And I said willing, and that's willing just so I can have a morsel to eat. I am going to accept the crumbs from the table. And when you continue to do that, then those that are in the position of power feel like they can continue to behave in the way that they've behaved. If you don't stand up for yourself, no one else is going to do that.
And I agree with that.
And that's we're talking about black women's equal pay mm-hmm. day because that is the subject. But overall, women are paid less than men, period. And black women are even disrespected more. So if you're not going to demand the respect, you are not going to receive it.
One of the things that happened in this particular series, and I encourage anyone who has not seen it to really look at it, because there are all kinds of
messages.
Thank you very much for that, Melanie. There are all kinds of messages, because Molly isn't just dealing with inequities in her pay. As she begins to negotiate and establish relationships between a white male boss, and she begins to see the other white men around and the camaraderie and the relationships, she's still way behind.
On the outside.
Yeah, thank you very, very, very much. And again, I think that kind of goes to the heart of what you were suggesting before. Not only, you know, what you can do, how you show up in the room, all of those other things, but it is indeed about about relationships. And that is difficult for black people in general. And I would argue black women specifically to deal with if you're talking about a white male power structure.
But that's why you need a sponsor. You need someone in addition to you can be stellar at what you do and you can show up and everything is pristine. But if you don't have a sponsor, someone that's actually going to co-sign for you, the road is going to be even more difficult for you to travel.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Pamela calling from Temple Hills. Thanks for calling, Pamela. What's on your mind?
Yeah. Hi, Harold. How are you and your guest?
Hey.
I just wanted to say, I think each case is different. Everybody's situation is different because sometimes people may have to be the one to take the lower paying job in order to feed their family, especially if you're looking at skill sets that may not qualify at the highest level for a certain position. So I think everybody's situation is different. What I would like to hear is really empowering black women to become more entrepreneurs. And also, I wanted to know, why are the black women being compared to the white male structure instead of the black man structure? I mean, why are we comparing what the black woman makes versus the white man? I think the white man always going to make more because that's how society has been established for years throughout history. And there are some black women who, you know, make a pretty good sum of money. And here's the last piece, Harold. There are black women and black men that are HR directors. And what are they doing to really promote that? I don't think much because I've been in situations where a person in personnel who's African-American, they can do more to offer you more money if you're African-American and have the skill sets. And sometimes their jealousy won't allow it. That's my comment.
Wow. Well, sit tight because everybody needs to get in on that. Who wants to take
it? Let me take it first. I'm an HR person. I'm an entrepreneur, have been an entrepreneur for the last 20 years and an HR person for almost the last 30. There are some things that we can control as HR folks, and there's some things that we cannot.
Salary isn't usually in your purview.
There's some latitude, depending on the way that the company is structured. There is some latitude. But as a woman of color, as a black woman, my first instinct is not to see how much I can, you know, take away from another person of color. I don't go into it that way. And I would venture to say most other black professionals in the HR space are not doing that. That said, there are some confines. There are strict budgets that are typically in place. You're given some latitude with maybe a margin of 10% on either end. So there's not a lot of room to negotiate in most cases. I go back to the idea of what does the organization see as the value of this role? If it's unique, they're going to pay you. If you bring a unique skill set, they will pay you. Now, if you're providing a skill set that is commoditized, that they can pick up anywhere from anyone, you're not going to have as much negotiating power. Now, if you want to control your own destiny, absolutely hang your own shingle. And if you're going to do that, do it well. And it will pay. But we can't just roll in any kind of way and look for a paycheck. That's not how it works.
But if you have a white male and a black female for the same job and you're putting them before a hiring manager, which one gets offered the most?
It depends on who the hiring manager is. If the hiring manager is a white person looking for another white person because they feel culturally connected to that person, then the black woman may not have a snowball's chance in Hades to get the job. Those are the facts. That's the culture and the environment in which we live. Now, what you do about that is a different story. You can make a decision to take the job and work your way up, demonstrate your expertise, or you can say, you know what, bump this. I'm going to do my own thing, and I'm going to write my own ticket. I'm going to write my own check.
And it may be the difference between the NFL, the NBA, as opposed to, you know, a law firm or an architectural firm, for example, and how one performs and all of the things that kind of, or in this case, the WNBA. Right, as Muriel gives me the side eye.
Melanie. I'm waiting to hear what Melanie's got to say.
Well, you know, right? I go back to the policy shift and the policy change that has to take place so that we can have, because what, 40 years, 40, what? This is 2017. We haven't even been in a position that many decades to even be off in a position to go into corporate America because of because we had systemic change that took place. And so in order for us to look at this next generation coming up, it's even more difficult for them. It's not even the opportunity. When I talk to sisters who are in corporate America, the positions aren't even there like they were in the 70s or 80s. So we're in a different time. A lot of black women in our report that we put out every year with the Black Women's Roundtable, we look at that and you look at how did we make it into livable wages or make it into middle class. It came either through a union jobs. How did more black people come? Most of those jobs were unionized. I mean, there was collective negotiation made in order for you to not just make a salary, but also have the kind of benefits that allow for you to be able to thrive, whether that be having paid sick days, paid leave, the kinds of things that allow for you, if you have a family, to be able to, not just women, but just overall. And then if you go and more black women are going into entrepreneurship, and the challenge in that space is even if we would have the kind of funding that you need to be able to grow your business. And so we've got a lot of things that go on, but we've got to change it. A lot of good things are happening on a local level. In all politics is local, where you can get the right mayor in office and the right city council in office. You can make those policy changes on a local level. But until we can get this federal thing worked out, it's never going to get there. It can get there individually. It can get there even in a group. But it can't get there systemically and change without that. And black women make what we talk about, black women. Latino women don't make the money. Black men don't make the money. Asian women don't make the money. White men, historically, make the resources because of the history of what this country has been made of all the time.
Thank you so much. Let me go to Michael. Michael calling from D.C. Thanks for calling, Michael. What's on your mind?
How you doing?
Doing just fine.
There's a couple of different things I want us to consider. I believe it was the Fiscal Policy Institute. They put out something that said in the District of Columbia, that most African Americans have a savings of about $3,000, while most white Americans in the city have a savings of close to $300,000. And so when you consider that point, in addition to the fact that I've worked in HR and training and development for several years, and even in the District of Columbia and the surrounding areas, African Americans take longer to find employment once they've gone through a job separation. And so when you combine the lack of savings with a longer search for employment, we end up, you're right, maybe we are taking whatever we can get. The last point I want to make is that I also think we stay in positions once we're there too long, and we're not continuously looking for the next thing. When I think, maybe white males are doing that. And so those are just some things I think we should consider.
Thank you, Michael. I appreciate that. Anybody want to respond?
We do.
To that?
We do tend to be. We are a loyal people. Mm-hmm. It just goes without saying. We are loyal to a fault, and so we will stay for the promise.
The promise.
There is no promise,
but there may, true.
The promise is done.
But we will stay for the promise, in quotes, with this hope that at one point they are going to recognize, they are going to appreciate, until we become frustrated.
I will tell you what, I have a tremendous amount of respect for millennials who are aggressive with their careers. They make a decision that I'm going to stay here as long as it suits me. And there is something that we can benefit from that trajectory that we see young people taking. And it's like, as long as this works for me and my career, I'm going to stay here. But at the point at which you devalue me or you no longer think I am worth it, I am moving on.
They go.
We have to stay in the front seat of our careers. Absolutely need to do that.
I need to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk to Emma in Arlington, Virginia. We're also going to talk to, I believe that's Just, calling from D.C., 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about Black Women's Equal Pay Day. We'll be back in just a moment. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We are talking about Black Women's Equal Pay Day. Why does it take Black women 7 months of work into 2017 to equal what their male counterparts were paid in 2016? Let me go to, I believe it's Just calling from D.C. Is that correct? Just, is that you? Are you there? Give me a call back if we can. Let's go to Emma calling from Arlington. Emma, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, guys. So my perspective is a little different. You know, I work in staffing. I'm a recruiter for a government services agency. 90% of the roles that we staff require security clearances. The other kind of can kind of teeter-totter on both sides. One of the things that I do notice, because I negotiate salaries every single day, is that women do not ask. I would say the majority of the salaries that I negotiate are with men because they negotiate. And generally speaking, say their number, I'll say my number, and that's pretty much where that conversation ends. Kind of following up on some of the things you guys talked about in the last, you know, segment, mm-hmm. I think that the perceived promise amongst most Black women is the promise of stability. You know, they don't want to go look for a new job. I would kind of disagree with the aspect, with the thought that, you know, millennials hopping from job to job to job. As a recruiter, we hate seeing those resumes, and hiring managers don't like seeing that either. I got into staffing because I wanted to make a difference from the inside. I know, and when you're in staffing and you get to meet your hiring managers, you know what kind of makes them tick. Certain people, you know, have certain biases. For whatever reason, they have those biases. In my position, I try my best to even the playing field. When I submit resumes to my hiring managers, I take all personal information off. So you're not going to look at Lakeisha Johnson and not look at her resume. You're going to look at her skill set first. I think that one of the things that as Black women or Black people that we kind of forget is that the playing field is not equal. So we have to be excellent. You can't come in at 75% and expect to get paid the same as a white person at 75%. It's just not going to happen. So we need to get that out of our mind. We need
Emma, stop that. Clarify that for the non-HR guy at the table. You said you can't come in at 75%. Well, what does that mean? Help me with that.
I think that sometimes, you know, we want to get into a certain role and we don't utilize all of the resources that will well equip us for those roles.
What do you mean by that?
We learn enough. You know, we want to be a systems administrator. So we'll get a couple of the certifications, but we won't get all of them. Mm. We want to be a recruiter. We'll get two recruiting certifications instead of all seven recruiting certifications. You have to force their hand when you're talking about their money. At the end of the day, like one of your panelists discussed, especially with government, there are caps for every labor category. So sometimes there is only but so high we can go. If you ask for it, more often than not, we will play around with those numbers within that range. But if you don't ask for it, why should we waste our money?
Tell me something real quick, because apparently you've got the magic wand of information for this conversation. When you said that, you know, white men ask and Black women don't. So I'm sure it's not so much what they say, but specifically, what is it or how is it that they are saying to take the negotiation to another level?
I mean, it goes a lot of different ways. I mean, I think that the people are taught, you know, whoever mentions the number first loses. Not true. A lot of the times, you know, I'll let you know. I'll give you a close number to what my cap is so I can see where the candidate's head is with what they expect to make. But the candidate that gets what they want is the candidate that stays by their number. Period.
Interesting.
If a company wants to bring you on and I tell you that the cap is 120 and you tell me I'm not budging for less than 130, we might take it and chew on it for a couple of days. But if we know that we want you because you have the skill set,
mm-hmm.
then we're going to do what we need to do on the back end to find the money. I'm going to do what I need to do on the back end to find the money.
Which goes back to my point.
Day. If
right.
the strongest candidates that I have, then I'm going to figure out a way to pay you. But if you're not the strongest candidate that I have, then why?
Yeah. Interesting,
so we
Lisa.
We have to be excellent. We have to be excellent.
That's it. You hit it. You know, we don't always bring our A game and then we want A money. You know, it doesn't quite. When my mother used to say, you can't drive, you know, and look for want steak money and you got hamburger money. You can't. It doesn't work that way. And so we have to be really mindful of how we show up. I'll say that over and over again. And what we negotiate, you hit it. If you ask for it, you may get it. You may not. But if the organization or the company sees that you are bringing something unique, or how you show up is in a way that is commanding and impressive, they will find the money. They will do it. I do it all the time.
Okay.
If you don't impress me, I'm not going to pay you top dollar. If you do, I'll find it.
Emma, thank you so much for sharing that with us. So what about once you're on the inside And what should you do if you, as the character in Insecure, discovered that a male colleague who does the same work, equally as qualified, and all things being equal, is making so much more money than you? How do you address that?
Well, you've got to do the research at first to make sure that that's fact and not fiction. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you have to have a presentation of what your value is that you bring to the table. And then you go in with that presentation of what the value is that you're bringing it to the table. This is what I've been able to produce. This is the outcomes. This is how it's impacted the bottom line to this company. This is where my value is. This is how I've been evaluated. This is the comments that I've received from my peers. This is the commentary from external clients. This is why I should be looked at in this way. And then ask the question, how should I be valuing myself? And then see where, because I'm about just putting it out there on the table, because it's not about being appreciated. It's about being valued. Mm-hmm. And there's a huge difference between the two.
Melanie, are we at a point when the Lisa Brown Exanders of the world and the Muriel Gars of the world get into these positions that they need to consciously try to make systemic change and to have these conversations with their peers that don't look like them, who don't think about these issues, that it may never occur to them that there may be some underlying bias that they don't even know about. When let me give Charlie an extra $20,000 because I have it, because we play golf together. As Lakeisha and I don't play golf together, but she's still a great employee. So I'm just, but that. Do you need to start having those conversations when you get to a certain level?
Well, I think everybody plays their position, mm-hmm. right? And so some of us who are rabble-rousers out there in the streets, sometimes I'm spending a lot of time in the streets. I think we have to, if we were able to make this issue, just like we make health care, for Black women, we still see health care as number one issue. Why? Because it impacts our income. It incomes our financial instability. So still yet today, affordable health care, it comes over living wages. So for us to see that change, I think what folks are doing, what she does in her position, what she does, everybody plays those positions. But you also have to utilize a way to leverage our political power to make that systemic change. That's the only way it's going to change. Elected officials have to change it. And so we have to make that issue important enough for you to see that kind of systemic change. We almost got there over those 8 years with President Obama, right? He made some executive changes that this current president is threatening to just roll back just because it was Obama.
Melanie, would you say
that reality about how you can see millions of people so that on a job, whether it's public or private, it's not legal to not look at equity.
Except there's a difference between policy and practice, right? Mm-hmm. So the law can say one thing. Mm-hmm. What happens in practice may be something entirely different.
And that's why you have an EEOC, and that's why you have all these other kinds of agencies.
Absolutely.
To be able to make that change. Because, right, you can put a law on the books, but you have to have a way to monitor that law and make
that's
sure it's
right.
happening. And so we can't allow for this administration to roll back EEOC, right? Because it has this, if you don't know the numbers, the other part of it is you also have this conversation going on around not paying attention to the numbers, to stop having it so that the Department of Labor won't collect the data. So if you don't have the data, then it becomes very obscure, right? And very even more subjective about how we change this situation that we find ourselves in.
I want to address this issue of, the obligation that we have when we're inside an organization, if we're in positions of power. If you're an HR professional, of color or not, you have an ethical and a professional obligation to help your organization be an equitable workplace. And that means looking at compensation data, slicing it and dicing it by gender, by age, by race, by every way you can to ensure that your organization is an equitable workplace in its pay practices and every other practice. I've done that for clients where we've gone in and we say, listen, you are disproportionately proportionately negatively impacting the salaries of people of color or people over the age of 40, which is also a protected class. So it's important that you bring that to the table and hold your organization accountable for making change.
And when that happened, what did they say? Did they go, oh, I didn't know, or was it just,
Well, it was a little bit of, and then it's my obligation as a professional to say, and here are the implications for doing nothing. You can sit and look at this, but what you don't want is the word on the street to be that you're a poor employer, because that has as much leverage as anything else these days. And if we could roll back and show the salary practices of some organizations and make that public, some of these organizations would be out of business tomorrow.
Like we do around issues of diversity, right?
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
Mary, I'll let you have the last word.
Oh, I was going to toss it to Melanie, but one of the things I was going to say is that a part of the change has to do with being involved, politically involved. And it's not just about being involved in the workplace, but also being involved as these legislations are being drafted, being involved in local politics, being involved in county politics, state politics. We're not going to be able to adequately bring about change for people of color if we're not adequately represented. So that starts with voting.
Well, but again, back to what Lisa said about policy versus practice, because obviously the practice has not caught up with even the philosophical thoughts about the
policy.
Yeah,
the but we can look at policy things and laws on the books that have actually created a financial hardship for organizations who have decided to test the waters. If the policies are not on the books, then the ability to force people to do what's right is going to be actually, it's going to be negotiated. When the policies are on the books, the ability to force people to do what's right will actually occur. And we could point to various ways that that has happened.
Well, I want to thank all of you for coming in and sharing with us tonight. Lisa Brown Alexander, Muriel Garr, and Melanie Campbell. Pay them.
That's right.
Pay them.
Just pay up.
Just pay up.
Do right.
Do it right the first time so you won't have to see Muriel on the backside, right? Muriel, you know I love you. That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. For this Monday, July 31st, I'm Harold Fisher. Follow me on Twitter at HFisherWHUR or Daily Drum WHUR. Now stay tuned for The Connection with Lorna Newton. Good night. Hey, happy August, everyone.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3.